Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's May the 17th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain markets with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain. She's out of Terre Haute, Indiana. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City will join us just after the bottom of the hour. And along the way, we'll hear more about the president's threatened veto should an appropriations bill hit his desk with $4 billion earmarked for disaster assistance to U.S. farmers stricken by drought last season. Other ag news includes a trip to Kazakhstan for the Secretary of Agriculture, a new earnings report from John Deere, and a couple of notes from the livestock industry. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialist. On the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
This news just in as we get started for the afternoon. Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid, a Democrat out of Nevada, and Senator Maria Cantwell, a Democrat from Washington State, have introduced an aggressive plan to promote energy independence by increasing the use of renewable fuels. The Energy Development for a Growing Economy, or EDGE, bill would provide the president authority to increase the renewable content of motor fuel to 25% by 2025. It calls for 25% of vehicles sold in the United States to run on ethanol, biodiesel, or alternative fuels by 2010. And the legislation also requires that 10% of the electricity in the country come from renewable sources by the year 2020.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, and equal housing lender.
Another hot day in the commodity markets for the day. Futures in Kansas City finished the July contract 20 and a quarter cents higher at 506. That's a close, but not a settlement price yet from Kansas City. July futures 423 up 19 and a half on their settlement in Chicago. And September wheat in Chicago at $4.33¾, up 18 and a quarter. July corn today, $2.63, up 4 cents. September's up 4 at $2.74. And December futures at $2.86¾. Up 3¾ on the day. The March futures 295½, up 3 cents. July soybean 604, the settlement price up there, a penny and a quarter higher. August futures at 610, up 3/4. And September's up 1¾ at 615½. Nov beans at 625½ for the harvest month, up 3/4 today. July bean meal 176.40, up 20 cents, and the July bean oil at 25.82. They were up 11 for the day. Mercantile exchange numbers, May feeder cattle at $103.55. They were off 30 for the day. June live cattle at $77.72½ were up 7½ cents, and the June lean hogs at $67.70. up 32½ for the day. Outside markets very quickly, crude at $68.60, trading down 93 cents at this hour. The CRB index off 380 at 390, or rather 349.40, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 187 points at 11,232 for the day. The gold June contract off $1.10 at $691.80 for the day.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened to the Board of Trade, the Mercantile Exchange, the outside markets, as he does every Wednesday afternoon. Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd. A rather dynamic day from Wall Street to LaSalle Street and every place in between.
Tell me about it for the wheat pit to begin with.
Well, of course, we saw gold and silver overnight shoot higher, dollar weaker, stronger energy, and then we had some inflation scares, and we did see some tremendous divergence in the marketplace. In the wheat market, we saw major concerns in growing regions of Canada and a continuation of dry weather forecasts for the plains area for at least another 10 days out, or as far out as any credible meteorologist wants to predict. And also we understand that there's rumors that maybe Argentina would slow exports down of wheat. Of course, we're going into the harvest period in South America. So it was a very big day in the Chicago futures pit, particularly wheat. And I think wheat possibly firmed corn up and kept soybeans up as well. But no doubt about it, wheat stole the show.
New contract highs, of course, made in wheat. Actually, I think December corn made a new contract high today at 287 as well.
The corn market, we saw some tremendous option plays, and it was related to some hedging of positions. But the general feeling, of course, is by sources are that, the price level hasn't hurt demand, and we still have a very tight situation, and we still have quite a bit of corn to plant, particularly south of here and east of here. In Indiana, for example, we see a lot of corn ground that needs to be worked, and the weeds are, in my opinion, fairly high. We do have some new remedies called Roundup and big four-wheel drive tractors that can make things happen quick, but the big part is yield drops, and it's not going to be easy, and private weather forecasters are calling for some more rain later on in the week. Nuisance rains, but it still prevents a major change towards planting.
Well, what are producers telling you about the corn that they have in the field?
They are very, very nervous about everything right here. And the big thing is I think the corn that's planted from here north is going to make it from here south. There is some concerns about spot planting. But the big factor is that, south of here there's 1 to 2 days of planting. And over in Indiana, I'm going to say a good 3 to 5 days.
Yeah, 13 cents doesn't look too terribly far away to $3 on December contracts for 07 and 08, I think, are above that already. What's the possibility?
You know, we're looking at a situation in which, an RFD this morning, they talk about this investment money coming in and it's changing the landscape. And, to the credit of your panel on Commodity Week this last weekend about these prices are attractive, but the problem is locking in the inputs and possibly even runaway demand on the upside, and the feeling is that about half to three-fourths of our phone calls are major concerns about participating in marketing programs, that we have too much of this coming planting crop planted, sold, and as well as the next year's corn crop. So, not only have they been caught at least on this year, but next year's as well. And marketing strategies and are being talked about how to prevent them from, in case there is a further run-up in prices.
Yeah, so what are you suggesting to protect
them?
Well,
we have some very unusual tools to help them with that. I don't want to go into the time frame and confuse people, but we do have some very, helpful tools that can prevent some major problems down the road.
And then are we looking at... the market is up in corn, but are you willing to say she's going to continue to go higher, or we just don't know at this point?
Well, a couple of things. The weather is an important factor. We do know that the government is very generous on demand, and particularly for next year, and it's even to the place where, at some point in time, the major grain companies seem to be widening their basis out. But when is the time frame going to come in when we don't have 150 bushel corn crop projected, where they'll be pushing the basis up to buy old crop to carry into the next year's carry? There's some tremendous carries in the marketplace. That's a marketing tool that everyone in the grain industry, from an exporter, a corn processor, or a farmer can use. So it's a very payable way to help pay for expenses and generate income.
Is the cash side of this market following up?
No, the cash side is rather dull still, but as that was the point I was trying to make, at some point in time, if we do see some yield loss, I do even think that the basis will improve to the place where you'll see a change in attitude in that situation.
Yeah, and even in the widening, in the widened area that we're running in at the moment, as long as it follows up The prices are higher one way or the other.
One demand problem seems to be some of the poultry, weakening of poultry demand, but, you know, that corn can be shifted to other parts of the country. And, of course, if there would be a shortfall of production, that's one thing, but also there is going to talk about some additional grain storage being built in the Midwest, and that's also a positive factor, particularly when we have this deferred demand that's popping up on the radar screen.
What do you see in the mercantile exchange?
The mercantile exchange continues to suffer from too much chicken, and as a result of that, that's even hurting some of the profit margins in cattle and hogs. At the highest levels of government, they're starting to push the cattle export, and I guess the Japanese president's coming to the U.S., and he doesn't want to be embarrassed by a bunch of senators from the western states and the Midwest pointing their finger about trade restrictions and not letting U.S. High-quality U.S. beef into Japan. We understand that there's even talk that China's going to open the door for beef, and that's a big market as well.
What did you make of the story earlier in the week about the Japanese wanting to come in and do a quick inspection? And I don't think it was a permit. I think they wanted to come into the meatpacking plants and inspect them and then leave. I know the U.S. has done that in other nations just to sort of as a face-saving mode to say, yeah, we took a look at them.
You know, our packing industry is probably the safest in the world, and, you know, two ways to do it. It's probably a stall tactic, but, you know, our standards are as high as anybody in the world. So, what do we have to hide?
All right, let's go back and we'll finish up with the soybean products and the beans, which didn't react very well today, given the upside on the corn and the wheat.
We have seen some major hedging in, maybe even speculating by certain companies that beans are probably high enough. And I agreed with the panelists last week on Commodity Week that saying that the bean market is acting pretty tired compared with the other markets. The bean market is looking at still major financial problems in South America and a crop-to-market there. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if there's not a lot of beans for sale, July through the November time frame in both hemispheres, South America and U.S. As a direct result, there's still some very strong holders of soybeans waiting for higher prices.
Hey, on Commodity Week this week, Glenn Ring is the guest. I know you read everything or a lot of what he has to say from time to time. Anything we ought to ask him for sure? You won't be in.
A couple things. Are we really looking at substantially higher interest rates?
Yeah.
A little bit about the dollar, and
yeah.
Where are we at on some of these longer term cycles? And in the corn, soybeans, and wheat. And you can be sure I'll be listening.
All right. Thanks much.
Have a profitable day, Todd.
You too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Wednesday afternoons.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City will join us for a look at the agricultural weather. AM 580's own Scott Althoff says there's a severe thunderstorm watch for northern Illinois and extreme northern Indiana issued by the National Weather Service. That until 7 o'clock Central Daylight Time this evening. Tonight, Scott says, there'll be some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms around the two-state region during the evening hours. Otherwise, it'll be clear to partly cloudy, some patchy fog forming. Lows will range this evening, says Scott, from 46 in northwestern Illinois to 54 in the south tomorrow. A mix of clouds, some sunshine, scattered showers, some thunderstorms developing during the afternoon. The highs from 57 near Lake Michigan to 74 in the far south. In today's agricultural news, according to congressional aides, legislators may leave for the Memorial Day recess without finishing work on the emergency supplemental bill. One of the stumbling blocks for the negotiators, The $4 billion ag disaster aid package included in the Senate's version of the measure. While a number of farm state lawmakers support the ag funding, the administration has said the aid is unnecessary. In fact, USDA chief economist Keith Collins and Risk Management Agency Administrator Eldon Gould have stated that crop insurance is the best way to handle ag disasters. We'll have more on that $4 billion later in this program. U.S. Ag Secretary Mike Johanns has scheduled a trade and investment mission to Kazakhstan and has invited agribusiness firms to participate. Johanns says he's looking forward to leading the mission in July. He says the mission will strengthen the U.S. relationship with that nation. That country is already the largest agricultural economy in Central Asia, but also has a real GDP that's expected to grow by more than 8% in the years 2006 and 2007. Dateline Moline, now Deere & Company, has announced worldwide net income of $744.6 million. That's $3.13 a share for the second quarter that ended April the 30th. And that compares with $604 million or $2.43 a share for the same period last year. Well, some Kansas meatpacking plant workers are suing Tyson Foods, alleging labor law violations. Backed by a recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling, workers at a Tyson food plant alleged in Kansas federal court on Monday that the world's largest chicken, beef, and pork producer violated federal and state labor laws. The, to date, 262 current and former workers at Tyson Fresh Meats Incorporated facility in Holcomb, Kansas, have joined the lawsuit, alleging that they did not receive wages and overtime pay as required by the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act and Kansas state law. And here's an interesting little tidbit. PETA, the People for Ethical Treatment of Animals, is now 0-2 with Applebee's shareholders. Last week, for the second year in a row, shareholders voted down a proposal from the animal rights group that would have required Applebee's suppliers to adopt controlled atmosphere killing, or CAC, for chickens. Less than 5% of shareholders voted in favor of the proposal. The People for Ethical Treatment of Animals contend that CAC of chickens is more humane than current protocols used in U.S. slaughter plants. During the CAC process, chickens are euthanized when oxygen is replaced with inert gas. Although CAC is used in Europe, Applebee's says the technology is still unproven, but will continue to monitor the situation. And finally today, this little tidbit, style matters even when managing livestock. That according to the Agriculture Research Service, who has found that proper management of cattle helps to develop a calm herd and leads to other benefits as well, like better weight gain. Take away some of the pain and the cattle respond. That one makes sense, doesn't it? Hey, that's a look at today's agricultural news. I'm Todd Gleason. Farm State Senate Democrats have launched a grassroots push to turn back President Bush's veto threat to an emergency supplemental spending bill, which includes $4 billion in ag disaster assistance. North Dakota's Byron Dorgan and Kent Conrad, along with Mark Dayton of Minnesota, Colorado's Ken Salazar, and Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas have launched online petitions to gather support for the disaster aid. With bipartisan support, Dorgan added the $4 billion disaster aid package to the bill, which was designed to cover the increasing cost of the war in Iraq and to provide some funding for hurricane recovery efforts. But as Dorgan noted yesterday, keeping the ag funding will be an uphill battle.
The president has said he strongly opposes agricultural disaster relief, and the Speaker of the House says that it is dead on arrival, referring both to the agriculture disaster piece as well as other provisions.
Dorgan says he worries the House is now trying to strong-arm the Senate by not coming to the negotiating table until the Senate gives in on non-war and non-hurricane spending. In fact, as of Tuesday, the House had not even appointed negotiators. As for the administration, earlier this month, top USDA officials, including Chief Economist Keith Collins and Risk Management Agency Administrator Eldon Gould, said crop insurance is the best way to handle ag disaster, but Minnesota's Mark Dayton says federal crop insurance just doesn't cut it.
If you don't have a crop, you don't get anything. I mean, that, you talk about a huge gap in the bill, which was
fatal flaw in it that the House of the President overlooked. If you don't have a crop, if you're 90% wiped out, you don't have any recourse. You don't have any way that you can make that up. Insurance covers part of that. Even disaster aid only covers part of it on a formula, but at least it means that those that are most destitute, that are obliterated through no fault of their own, through some natural disaster, as we're saying about the people in Louisiana or Mississippi, if you suffer that kind of total grievous loss that you can't recover from, that's when, as a taxpayer, you need your government to extend a helping hand.
Dayton says, and this is a quote, "It's unacceptable to have a bill come out of conference committee that eliminates disaster assistance for all but two states, Louisiana and Mississippi. The farm aid package would cover 50% of losses above 35% of normal production, plus some energy cost increase. But now Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas says she's just hoping the package even sees the light of day." During his weekly teleconference, by the way, with Farm Broadcasters Tuesday morning, Iowa Republican Chuck Grassley expressed some optimism. The conferees will again try some level of disaster funding for ag producers, though it will likely be less than the $4 billion agreed to in the Senate.
Everything has to fit into $92 billion, else is subject to a veto. And I believe that there will be some disaster relief for farmers, particularly, I think, because of the drought in Illinois, Missouri, and eastern Iowa last summer. To some extent, there would be compromise to get the dollar amount down, to get it included with what I think will fit into a bill that's not going to be vetoed.
Some have questioned whether the president would actually follow through and exercise his first veto if a larger bill makes it past the conference committee. But Grassley notes 35 senators have signed a letter vowing to support the president's veto if he issues one, and that should give Mr. Bush more encouragement to do so.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. With every kernel, every grain, every seed, ADM sees possibilities to improve everyday life. ADM, resourceful by nature.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on AM 580. I'm Todd Gleason on this Wednesday afternoon, joined as always for the Cash Grain segment by Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana. Beautiful afternoon, isn't it, Kay?
Lovely afternoon to you, Todd.
And I bet the farmers are happy to be in the field there in your part of the world. Are they there yet?
Nope.
No.
No. The rain started last Wednesday, and we've had anywhere from an inch and a half to 2 inches since then, and there is nobody in the fields here. If you're on some light sand ground, you might be able to get back this weekend, but we're still far behind. We haven't planted anything since you and I talked last week.
Oh, wow. Well, our hearts go out to those folks that aren't putting that crop in the ground, because we know what that means. That'll be tough in your area. How's the basis been taking that then?
Not well. The basis is deteriorating. I think we've probably seen the basis top out for now, and I mean cash and new crop. Farmer selling has really been considerable. Friday, the day the report came out, gee, many Christmas, I guess nationwide, it was a record day. And even since then, even this afternoon, I will be busy, and tomorrow with this little spurt up we've had today. They meet every rally with the farmer selling.
And what are your bids for the day?
Our cash corn today is $2.38. Cash beans are $5.78. The wheat is $3.79.
And then when you take a look at the basis, even going to the trains, is that deteriorated too?
Oh, yes, because we ship everything by train. We ship a few beans by truck, but mostly it all goes by rail. And yeah, the farmers are selling cash and new crops. So yeah, basis levels are deteriorating all the way across the board.
And anything else to add on this marketplace before I let you go for the day?
I don't think so. You just keep the sun shining and make the rain go away, and there's going to be a lot more happy people over here.
We'll try our best. Thanks much.
Thank you, Todd.
Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana. She joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Wednesday afternoons. In just a moment, we'll take a complete look at your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. A spokeswoman for Illinois Governor Rob Blagojevich acknowledged today that the governor's office tracks people it hires for state jobs, along with the often politically connected people who sponsor them. The admission came after the Associated Press reported the Democratic governor kept a list of job applicants and their clout-heavy sponsors early in his administration. Abby Ottenhoff says every application goes through the legal hiring process. Federal and state investigators both have opened probes into the Democratic governor's hiring practices. And GOP Lieutenant Governor candidate Joe Burkett says the governor's office should release the list. A Danville apartment building closed for two decades is open once again. Crosspoint Human Services says there's now a waiting list for some of the 47 units reserved for lower-income residents in the new Holland Apartments. The Holland Apartments were built 101 years ago for wealthy residents on the north edge of downtown Danville, but the building had sat empty since the 1980s until its latest revival. Honda officials say they will build a $400 million plant somewhere in the Midwest. Indiana officials are hoping it will be in Decatur or Ripley counties, where Honda attorneys are talking to local officials today. Honda won't further identify the site for the plant. Health officials in Macon County, Illinois, used a survey of Decatur's young people to find out how to address issues like lack of exercise, obesity, mental health, and substance abuse. Survey results from two Decatur high schools have helped healthcare workers in the county put together a toolkit that will allow those who work with youth to address those issues. Linda Keyhart of the Macon County Community Health Foundation says they'll follow up with a new survey of Decatur youth in 3 months on more specific areas. And Champaign has joined the growing list of Illinois cities that have banned smoking in bars and restaurants. The city council approved the ordinance in a 5-4 vote last night after hearing from 40 people during the public comment portion of the meeting. The ordinance takes effect August 1st, pending passage of a similar ban in Urbana. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now to take a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner, the Senior Agricultural Meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, a little bit of sunshine around the Midwest for parts of the day today. I thought we were going to get some rain, but things cleared out a bit. Can we expect warmer temperatures at least?
There's actually hope that we're going to get out of this rut we're in. The cool and rather moist weather pattern that's been with us since late last week is going to prevail on into the weekend, but as we go forward in time, we're going to see less and less precipitation and a little bit warmer weather moving into the area. We'll probably see some fairly decent conditions next week with temperatures actually rising above average eventually, but that will be something we'll have to wait a little while longer for. We do expect to see temperatures continuing mostly in the 60s and 70s across the eastern half of the Corn Belt as we go through the next few days, but some of that will actually be a lot warmer than it's been, so that'll be a good news in itself. But as we go through the coming weekend and early part of next week, those temperatures will continue to warm. We might even start seeing some 80-degree temperatures by the time we get to the end of the weekend, and a good potential that we'll see some more heat come on late next week after maybe a brief period of cooling during the early to middle part of next week. So in general, we're headed in the right direction. Warmer weather should help to stimulate some quicker crop development rates. We should see greater sunshine, so the yellowing issues should go away. We'll probably also see some timely shower and thunderstorms coming back in late in the week next week and probably see a decent amount of net drying in the meantime. So we're headed down the road towards improvement here for much of the Midwest.
Yeah, that road starts first, I think, out west. Did I see some 90-degree temperatures that are forecast for the Dakotas and part of the Plain States and
yes,
that hard red winter wheat area?
Yes, you did. In fact, we're going to be a lot warmer than that in hard red wheat country, and that's probably the biggest concern that's pushing the wheat market today. We're looking at temperatures that will rise over 100 degrees out there in portions of the west central and southwestern plains as early as Friday, perhaps, and continuing Saturday. We'll see heat back off just a little bit as we go through the end of the weekend and early next week, and then it'll come back again as we go deeper into next week. And the heat out there at a time when these crops are still finishing up the reproductive process and moving into the filling stage is definitely going to hurt some of that grain quality, reduce some of the grain sizes as well. So our yields may come down a little bit additionally across some of that region. And yes, you're absolutely right. The heat will reach all the way up into Canada, actually. We'll be seeing temperatures in the southern Canadian prairies reaching up into the 80s and some 90s. just spoke with a Canadian farmer in southern Saskatchewan earlier today, and he was telling me how terribly dry it is there right now, and he's very concerned about the future of his crop and the environment of Canada. It's actually predicting a drought for them all summer long.
Speaking of dry conditions in Canada, that those conditions stretch a little farther to the south, and I think parts of Iowa and Nebraska have been awfully parched as of late.
Yes, that's true. You know, while we've had this upper-level cutoff low-pressure center that's produced all this rainy and cool weather across the Midwest, we've had persistent dry conditions in the western Corn Belt. It's been rather mild up until recently, but we are starting to warm up the air now, and that, on top of the dryness that's in the air and on the ground, is making those temperatures rise a little bit more, and we are going to see more and more loss in soil moisture across the western Corn Belt for a while here. And as those temperatures peak out in the early part of next week, and they will get up over 90 degrees in some areas west of the Missouri River, maybe even a few locations in western Iowa, we'll probably see that stress situation become a little bit more serious, and then we'll start getting a little bit of shower and thunderstorm activity coming along as we look at a little bit of cooler air coming back temporarily sometime next week.
Drew, we appreciate you being with us for the day.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens on Wednesday afternoons. You have a great afternoon, and don't forget to visit our website. If you miss something you want to pick up off the agricultural programming content, you can do that right here at WILLAG.org. I'm Todd Gleason.